I'm Megan Wall. I'm the pastoral leader of special needs here at Stonebriar. And I have two children. I have Jackson, who is almost 8, and then I have Grayson, who is 5. And so I'm kind of speaking to or from the stage of recently coming through the baby and toddler years into the young elementary age. And then Chrissy is my counterpart, and she is speaking. Do you want me to say it?
I am speaking. Generation? I'm sorry, did you just say the older generation? Really? That's not even qualifiable. What is the older? Didn't that require gray hair or something?
No.
I don't have gray hair. I'm not even trying to cover it up. No, I'm speaking as the wiser one. That's right. I know more.
Most definitely. I will give you that. Most definitely the wiser one of the two.
So my name is Chrissy Smith. I also work here as a pastoral leader at Stonebriar. I've been here about 10 years on staff, and my husband and I have been a part of the church since it started. We've been married 22 years, and I have a daughter that is 15, almost 16, please Lord, help me now, and a son who is 12. My son is got different, various special needs, developmental issues, and so we have been a part of the special needs ministry here at the church, as well as kind of filling in all areas of that part of the world and trying to understand. Megan and I came together trying to help create a picture of how we are surviving, have survived, will continue to survive in the midst of chaos, hopefully giving you different perspectives depending on what yours is and how many children you have, what ages they are. She's got what would qualify as typical kids. I have a special needs child and I don't know how typical she is really. I think she qualifies special needs too, but we're going to hopefully give you a broad enough perspective on age and experiences that it'll give you the opportunity to think about some things maybe you haven't thought about, or maybe even discuss with your spouse, the other parent, some ideas that you might want to continue with in the future.
So we are going to stay with our theme for the day of chaos and openness and being vulnerable, and we're going to share a lot of craziness in both of our lives. So why not start then hear some of your craziness? So if anyone has a story, a funny thing that someone said in the past 24 hours that just exudes chaos in your home or really highlights your quality parenting skills, then
said with dripping sarcasm,
then jump up and share with us your story, and you'll get a one-of-a-kind Stonebriar t-shirt.
Competition for Mom and Dad of the Year. I know you've got one. Oh, see, there's a taker.
I was trying to give my 18-month-old twins a bath, and they both broke loose and ran naked through the house. And rather than try to catch them and clothe them, I took their picture.
That's right, girl. Get that video rolling. Save that for their rehearsal dinner or something for the future.
You won the Chaos Award just by saying 18-month-old twins.
Yeah, that's right. You had us at 18-month-old twins.
I cannot imagine. My husband's a twin, and he was praying for twins, and I was praying hard against him, and we know who won. I won.
I thought, what happened to working as a team?
No. At that point, it's all about praying against him. So we're going to start today. This is, like we said, surviving amongst the chaos, and hopefully we're going to give you some good tips or some takeaways that you can take from our stories. We hope that whenever you walk out of here, if you don't have anything that just resonates, anything more than just knowing that you're not alone, and that even though both of us are on staff at a church and leaders of ministries, our lives are chaotic, and there are times when I know that the Lord is just looking down at what I'm doing with my children and laughing and thinking, really, you're about to teach a class on parenting amongst the chaos. Let me throw this at you and see how you do. And I don't do well. There's a lot of times where I ask a lot of forgiveness, both of my children and of everyone around me watching. So we hope that whenever you walk out of here, you'll know that you're not alone, that whatever you're going through or what you've been through or your stories that you've shared, there's someone else that's sharing those stories with you. But we're going to talk about some different areas of chaos. We're going to give you a myth that we all tend to believe in. And then we're going to talk about the truth that the Bible shares with us and that all of us really know. We just generally choose to believe the myth first, and then some takeaways of how to go on from that. So the first one is chaos of the holidays. I'm going to put some pictures up here, and as you see them, if your heart rate starts to increase, raise your hand, because mine's already raised.
Honesty, I love it.
So you'll see that these four icons represent our social media: Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We are in the age of comparison, but not only do we compare about how we spend the holidays, how we adjust to the holidays, what we do for the holidays, not only do we compare those in person, but we get to compare them online with the rest of the world. Valentine's just passed, and that's what brought all this up, is we were talking about earlier about Valentine's Day, and how many of you, when you were in elementary school, were your Valentine's like rainbow bright, one little paper with this little envelope that didn't stick even if you licked it, and all you did was barely write your name on it, put it in the envelope, and then you put it in the Valentine's box? Yes?
And so, the really fancy ones you put candy with.
Maybe.
One candy.
Yes.
Right? And that was like the rich kids.
Yeah. And so you could bring home all of your Valentine's from your class party with 25 kids. You could bring it home in an envelope.
And
right?
That was back when we could put everybody's name on there.
Yes.
Like now they won't even let you put the kid's name on it. You just have to...
To a friend.
You all you can do is sign your own name, right?
Or to a friend.
Oh, you have to put to a friend?
Yeah.
What if you're not friends?
You are. Valentine's Day, that's what you do.
Friendship Day, that's right. We call it Friendship Day.
So this Valentine's, now that Pinterest is alive and well, how many of you felt pressure to make a minion out of a Valentine's box in order to send with your child to school?
Please don't raise your hand.
That was the one that I saw all over. I'm telling you, when my child came home with their box from preschool, this is preschool, when they came home with their box from preschool with all the Valentine's in it, there was one package of markers with this cute little label on it that said, "I hope your Valentine's Day is as colorful as you are." Then there was a whole thing of candy with all these cutouts with all this stuff on it. And then there was, what were some of the other ones that we saw? Like the oranges. Some people that want to be healthy now for Valentine's Day put an orange in it and it said, you know, "You're a cutie." And so the little cutie
orange.
Wow. Oranges. Great ideas. But for me,
Pinterest terrifying. Ideas. I wouldn't have thought of
that. Terrifying. I can never measure up to that. I'm working. I'm trying to keep food on the table. I don't have time to think about Valentine's Day and making it as perfect as Pinterest explains. So to me, that was an area of chaos in my life, all trying to live up. And what it comes down to is the act of comparison and this general myth. You're not doing enough and you're not doing a good job. Because that's what I felt whenever I opened that Valentine's box and there was that cutie. I was thinking, well, crud. I'm just the mom that wrote Happy Valentine's Day on a piece of paper and shoved it in an envelope, and off we went. And
I was
that comparison.
I'm going to compare.
Do it.
Okay. So I was not that mom. I was the mom that said, "Why'd they spend all that money and time on it?" Because within a week, when she wasn't looking at that box, I threw it all in the trash. So those people spent all that time on it, and I feel really bad now because I just put it in the trash because she wasn't going to eat it anyway. It was just going to sit there for another... I mean, when the first kid, I left it, but it was in the pantry for a whole year. I mean, have you not come across your kid's Valentine box?
Absolutely.
A year later, and they still didn't eat it. It's just like the Halloween candy. I'm like, "Oh, this is so cute. Oh, this is so yummy." And then when they're asleep, trash.
Chunk it. So the myth, you're not doing enough and you're not doing a good job. Truth. Here's the truth. We all compare ourselves to others. That's just part of our sin nature. But comparison is the one thing we do to undermine our abilities.
Would you all agree? Can you all readily admit, guys included, come on, that we all compare? So women compare. You guys don't even know what Pinterest is or care. But
there's some under here. I see. So I know there's some Pinteresting on Pinterest. No.
Well, yeah, but they're closet Pinterest people.
Yeah,
we don't want to talk about that in public. Minterest. Ooh, Minterest. Yeah, I like that. Deviation. That we all compare, and to just be able to get that out alone helps us realize that we're not the only ones. And that long before social media gave us the ability to compare out in inner space, whatever it's called, that we were always comparing. I mean, comparison has been around since the beginning of time because it sets us up, it puts us in that position of temptation for pride. Yeah, the good, regular, old-fashioned sins. Pride, jealousy. We got a lot of that going on. Mm-hmm. Especially, I mean, you got to have comparison to have jealousy, don't you? Right? And then coveting. Right? So jealous, I want that. Covet, I don't want you to have it because I can't have it. And I don't need the internet to help me with those opportunities for wanting to compare myself with people who are getting to do things that I don't get to do because I've got kids. I mean, do you guys have friends that don't have kids and they're just traveling all the time and getting to go shopping and pick out whatever they want and buy it right then and not have to use the word budget and all those unique situations that come without that? Or can you remember back before you had kids when you had a little bit more leisure with your time? I mean, it's not just tangible money things, but your time, your ability to make decisions was just, hey, what do you want to do? Forget anybody else. It's just, what do you want to do or what do I want to do? It was so much simpler in that sense. And now the game is bigger. It is, the stakes are higher. And now this comparison game can be intrusive in between you in a marriage, which gets the stakes a lot higher. And now we've got it in an audience of kids that are watching.
So what do you do about this? What do you do about comparing, about believing the myth that you're not good enough or that you're not ever going to be good enough? Well, the first one is, it sounds really easy, but stop comparing. When we were talking about this, we were like, well, what do we say? How do you solve this? Well, you just stop. But it sounds a lot easier than it is. One thing that you can do is get off Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter, Instagram, if you need to. The key is recognizing where you're finding that comparison coming from. If you're one that's on social media a lot, and every time you're on there, you start looking at everyone else's statuses and wondering, why not me? Or they go to Mexico every other weekend. I wish I could go to Mexico every other weekend, and I wish I had the ability to do that. I wish I could leave my kids here. I wish my husband gave me that. I wish my kids were playing this sport and getting this award. Is that something that you struggle with? And if it is, if you find that every time you pull up social media, that's what your mind starts doing inside, then you need to stop. You just need to take a break and use it as a time to remind yourself of who you're comparing to. There is no one like you. There is no family like yours. There is no situation like yours. There is no one for you to compare to. You have got to give that up and allow the Lord to be the point in your life to go to.
And if you're not, if you just went, I don't get on Facebook, I don't do Instagram or any of those picture things, I'm off the hook. So then you got to look a little bit harder for those areas where you're doing that, because you are. Is it at work? Are you comparing performances between you and other people in your area or the people whose job you want? Are you comparing where you live, your house, the size, what you have, the vehicle that you drive? Boy, he gets to drive that car. Why don't I get to do that? Well, because I have three kids and he has none. That probably has a little bit to do with it. Where else? I mean, what are your areas that you know are your areas of weakness for needing to compare and feeling like you're setting yourself up to where you're always having to come to that conclusion of, I don't have it. I'll never get it. I'm a failure. Because that's ultimately the reinforcement, right? I mean, you're going to come up with, well, there it is again. Other people are getting to do more. Other people have more. I mean, surely that's not beneficial for us, right? I mean, is that working for anybody? Is that helping you be a better parent? Is it helping you be a better husband or wife? Do you find that when your spouse is making those comparisons that you feel less than? Because often we do that and it ends up being hurting the very person we're married to. Because maybe they're okay with the house we have and all I do is focus on what it isn't.
Or it hurts those relationships that you're in, your friendships. If right. You're constantly comparing, even though you might not say anything, you've been talking to yourself internally about this for a long time, and you might find that that really starts damaging the friendships that you have with other people because you've already built that up in your mind.
So think of some of those areas and some of those temptations that you have for comparison and be willing to consider those at least. Start there and try to decide, what are some of those places that I want to think about doing differently, or at least say, There it is again. Right there in front of me. I'm trying to figure out how I'm less than. It doesn't sound right if you do it that way.
So whenever you're thinking that you're not enough, there are nights when I lay in bed and I think, gosh, I really screwed today up. I did not measure up to what the world expects me to be, to what I feel like my husband expects of me, to what my parents raised me to be. But I had to come to terms with a few things that are going to matter in my life. And I had to make these for myself and decide that these are some important things that I'm not going to waver on. I can let everything else go, but these are some things that I'm not. To me, that I want to know my kids are loved, that my kids aren't hungry or cold. And by hungry, I don't mean nutritious. I mean that they have food in their belly. So I'm not going to beat myself up that I gave them SpaghettiOs for lunch instead of organic. What is organic? Because I don't buy organic.
Chicken.
Organic chicken and vegetables.
Vegetables, right. I'm sorry, vegetables.
We do vegetables. One protein and vegetables. So I'm not going to beat myself up over that whenever that's what I'm hearing all the time. I'm going to say, okay, were my kids loved? Did my kids have food? Are they cold tonight? No. And then the last one, do my kids know their worth in Christ? Throughout the day today, did they, and somehow, probably not through me because I've messed up so bad, but did somehow they recognize their worth in Christ? If I can answer yes to those questions, I feel like I've had a pretty good day. So it's not, did I make the best Valentine's? Did I do the best thing for my child in this instance whenever they disobeyed? Did I overreact here? Did I forget to pack a lunch here? Done that before. Did I forget to put shoes on them at one point? Yes, got all the way to West Texas without shoes for one child. Done that before. But it's, are they loved? Are they hungry or cold? And do they know their worth in Christ? And if I can answer yes to that, I feel like I'm okay.
I think it's fair to say that when it comes to comparison regarding our children as a parent, us women are a little bit, I'm going on a limb here, but a little bit worse at this. Honestly, and being a counselor here at church, the most common story I hear from women is the over incredibly powerful pressure and stress of being a mom. Not a wife, not a daughter, not a sister, not even a friend, certainly not a believer of Christ, but rather being a mom. The competition around here, the areas for comparison, you can't go anywhere without. And by the way, it doesn't just mean that you're at the playground and you're comparing yourself to another mom that has kids kind of your age. Like you could level the playing field somewhere there. It is on your advertising everywhere you go. I always use Preston Road. Like you can't get down Preston Road without stumbling constantly because every sign, even some of the you marketing people hate me, but even some of the symbols for advertising, it just triggers that part of our brain that goes, oh yeah, we still haven't gotten to that. Never been to Cirque du Soleil. I'm the worst mother ever. You know, I mean, there's those things that come up in conversation all the time. And so there's constant places where moms are getting tripped up. And the guys tend to, in the comparing for parenting sake, the guys tend to be a little bit more grounded. They're a lot more simplified in thinking and they think like linear, right? And so this is not that difficult for them. He's like, look, I went to work, I came home, they paid me, and we got to eat. And you're a great mom. Stop crying. Right? I mean, he just can't even wrap his brain around her wallowing in the, I'm not doing this, and this isn't enough, and our kids don't know their ABCs by the time they're three, and they still have to be potty trained. And he's like, I don't even, he didn't read any of that information. He has no idea what you're talking about. Let's take a deep breath and say he's a good guy for this reason, that he has something to help you with. And I mean this sincerely, that there's reason that God put us together and we're so different. This happens to be an area where the guys, I'm challenging you to say, what are words that you can say to your wife, to the mom of your children, that will give her a breath of air that says, you're giving her an opportunity to say, we're okay. We're good parents. We're doing our very best. You're a great mom. One, because you signed up to go to a parenting summit. I mean, the people that
preach it on a Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah. And so give her the permission to just be as good as she is that day. And girls, you got to be able to hear that. I mean, you're beating yourself up. He's not beating you up. He's fine with sitting around all day and not doing anything. She is not. I mean, she has to have come to the end of the day. Like, did you hear her example? She's already, like, her example alone, and that was to free her up, by the way, was to be able to say, you know, this got done, this got done. There's a thought process out there that says you didn't have to do anything in a day. I know it doesn't happen in this area. That just doesn't happen around here. You have to sort of go to camp or something for that. Yeah, or a retreat or something. But use that opportunity between you as a father and a mother to encourage each other and free yourselves up from being comparison.
Absolutely. So a lot of this is going to travel throughout our next examples about making it more about us and changing our hearts and our wills as opposed to changing the stuff that's around us.
Our kids,
our homes. So the next one is chaos in your home. So here is a picture that I posted, if you're friends with me on Instagram or Facebook. This is a picture I posted on Facebook about 6 months ago. I had just gotten this wall done. We're trying to make our house look presentable. I was really excited, so I took this picture. If I took a picture of the other angle, this is what you would have seen. So which one do you think is closer to reality? The second. But the way that we frame, or the way that we use the camera, the way that we make things look, we can really easily post pictures that make it look like our house is perfect all the time and our lives are so put together. In reality, though, this is the room that you walk into our house right as you come out the front, off the front door. So front door to the right, you see this. This is my life. Craziness. Right in the front door. But I didn't want to show that because I want to keep this image that everything is great. That, you know, I work full time. I have two children. We have sports. We have activities. My husband works. We have all these balls in the air. But we're doing great because look at my house. Isn't that a pretty wall? Yes. But behind that wall is reality. And I think sometimes we're so scared because of the chaos in our home or the chaos in our lives to share that with other people because we want to keep this facade up of you can know me from a distance and know I'll let you know enough about me to see that first picture, but I'm not going to let you see the second picture because that's real truth and that's my life. So when we were talking about this, the myth that we came up with for our home is a peaceful home is a blank home. When we first started talking, I immediately said, well, a peaceful home is a structured and organized home. And Chrissy started laughing and she said, for you? She said, that's not peace for me. And so we thought, you know, that's true, that everyone's different. So if you had to fill in that blank, what are some things you would say? A peaceful home is a...
Come on.
Happy home? Blessed.
So there, I see smiling. Everybody's smiling in a happy,
because you're thinking
home.
Peaceful home.
Peaceful means you got to be smiling.
Loving,
healthy. Oh, healthy. I love that word. Is that the cutie healthy or the emotionally healthy or
not at the doctor's office.
Y'all are so much better at this than I am. Whenever I think peaceful, I think structured and organized. Y'all have these great words of happy, healthy.
So then the counter question is: so is it a peaceful home if it's cluttered? If there's dishes in the sink, if the stuff in your refrigerator has stuff growing on it, is it possible?
Yes.
Man, y'all are ahead of that group earlier.
I know.
Not that
you're
I'm comparing.
You're making me feel bad. I'm going, no, it's not peaceful. If I step on a Lego coming down the stairs, there is no peace in that. I'm just telling you, no
That's
peace.
That's just pain.
Seriously. I'll throw it out there for you. A peaceful home is an absent home, meaning that we're gone.
You're never home.
A peaceful home is a home without people in it.
We're on vacation.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Now that might want to work. That might fly for everybody in here.
Chaos every
day. Yep.
So can you adapt to that? Can you adapt to the chaos? I mean, can you welcome that and make it peaceful?
We're used to it, so it's peaceful to us. But you know, someone from the outside came. My mom came to visit. It's chaos.
And so that's one of the things that we're trying to acknowledge is that we have this disconnect between what really is true at your house and what you're trying to say is true for other people. And honestly, if you break it down, we're not really just trying to tell other people we've got it going on and we're perfect. I mean, I think, you know, in our self-actualized age of the last 25 years, we've really tried to settle on, camp on this idea that we're wanting to promote to other people that we've got it going on and that we're good and we're great parents or we're keeping up with the Joneses or all those statements. But truthfully, the only reason we try to present other people that we're doing okay is to try to convince ourselves that we're doing okay. Is that right? Everybody's nodding their head. That's right. So we're doing a horrible job if we've got such a disconnect between what it's really like. I mean, if you're okay with the chaos in your house, and yet you're having to take a giant leap for when somebody comes to visit, or you avoid being social with people because you don't want them to get an inside to that, then you have to be willing to acknowledge that within yourself or yourselves, because maybe as a couple, you're sort of partnering with one another to promote that. Then that alone is such a disconnect that says the chaos has gotten to us so much so that we've created this other life to make it okay. So what are you really experiencing? I mean, and how do you find a way? I mean, our hope as a church, when we think about ministry and groups to be a part of and parenting conferences, we hope that people will come here and feel like it's okay for every one of you to say, my life is chaotic. My house does look like that sometimes. I would hope that if I knew you were coming by, okay, all the time. Now we're getting really honest.
We're being truth.
I thought we were just kind of honest. If you were coming by, I might pick up, but I might not. I mean, it just depends on if I can see anything or not. If I'm just going blind by the chaos, right? So how are you able to be a part of a community, be it your neighborhood, your family, your church, and feel like it's okay to live in chaos and help each other out with it? Again, asking, hoping that you all would leave here today knowing that you're not alone, that we're all surviving in some way, shape, or form. If you've got little kids, it looks one way. If you've got middle-aged kids, or if you're middle-aged, then you sound like that. Or you've got older kids, or maybe they're gone already. And you're just praying for that day that you'll be able to relate to the idea that everybody's kind of gone through this. Parents have been doing this since the beginning of time. It's just looking a little bit different because of what you started out with, and that is social media and the avenues for comparison are a little bit broader.
Right. So the truth is the definition of peaceful is different for everyone at every stage of life. True peace comes from within. So our idea of peace, as was mentioned, is going to be different. We're all different. And then every different stage of life is going to be different. My idea of peace before children was much different now than my idea of peace now. My idea of peace with babies in the house is much different than it is now. And it's going to continue to look different through every stage and through everything that the Lord weaves in and out of our lives. But we have to know that the peace that we have to cling to is that peace that comes within. How can you still find peace within yourself amongst chaos? Because you won't be able to control everything around you.
And you want to know for yourselves as an adult, as the parent, what is that for you? It's really pointless for us to talk about how are you teaching your children that? How are you finding books for them or coloring projects for them to learn that if you're not sure what that is for you? And are you able to even talk about that in your marriage? As parents, can you say, okay, you're okay with the chaos, but when I come home and it's chaotic, it's horrible for me, like so much so that I avoid coming home. All right, well, time out. We don't want you to avoid coming home. So how do we talk about that in such a way that you establish as a couple, what does that look like? How do we control the chaos, respond to the chaos, make sense of the chaos in a way that creates a home for both of us that's peaceful? Because you could have grown up in two different types of families. And therefore, when you come together, it looks and sounds and feels very different. And it's essential if you want to come together and create this same kind of worldview and influence for your kids that you guys have done that together.
Right. That goes with the takeaway, the acknowledge that your expectations of peace are going to be unrealistic. When you decide that a peaceful home is blank, you could get to that goal. I could easily have an organized home with structure and everything in its place. But if I don't have peace from within, then there's still not going to be peace in my home. Make a plan to eliminate at least one area that you consider unpeaceful. So that's like what Chrissy said with talking, especially with your spouse, and mm-hmm. being open and honest about the areas that you feel like are peaceful or are not peaceful. And what does that look like for you? And what could we do to change that?
And
go ahead.
And compromise. I mean, the name of the game in marriage is communication and compromise at all times. So if indeed when he's coming home and he says, it is horribly disruptive for me to come from a difficult day at work and I walk in and it's chaos and I get the sense that I'm the bad guy the minute I walk in the door because the kids are all over the place and you have lost control and you're trying to cook dinner and everything's trying to be in perfect place. Or she says from the reverse, and I know this is stereotypical, but I got to get an example somewhere. She feels like she has to have everything in order. I've heard plenty of women still today that work overtime to make sure everything's all clean and perfectly put away and she's dressed nicely and the kids are all clean and ready for dad to come home. Like she puts all that pressure on herself because that's going to make a difference of him coming home and what peace looks like. If you don't talk about that, I mean, that's just mere communication. So, okay, no, it's not necessary for all that to happen, but it'd sure be nice that when I get home, if I call and say I'm on my way home, you've got 30 minutes to take a deep breath. Like I'd just soon not see the freaking out stress on your face than anything else in the house. You know, what the kids are doing or where the toys are is not as relevant as where you are when you meet up together at the end of a day. And how do you communicate? Because you guys, that's where your kids are watching. That's where they're learning about how to deal with stress and the chaos that we're trying to talk with you about. They're watching you and how you're responding to it, and especially how you respond to each other in the midst of it. Because that means this is how it plays out, demonstrates relationally. And they want to know, what do they do when they get stressed and it's chaos in their classroom? I mean, if you guys have school-age children, there are teachers that have chaotic classrooms. And that's very disruptive to some kids and really freeing for others.
Yes, so when you find yourself unpeaceful again, remind yourself of the things that matter most, those things that you go back to. I go back to, are my kids loved? Are they hungry or cold? And do they know their worth in Christ? To let everything else, all the craziness around me go, and come back to that one thing. The things that matter are the things that matter. And you have to decide what those are for your own family. But is craziness, is the unpeaceful feeling, is the feeling of chaos okay? Is it fun? No. But is it okay? Yeah.
The new normal, isn't that like one of the fun things to say now?
The new normal.
And if you don't have an idea of this yet, if you're not sure if you can say, I'm at a place where I can say, are my kids loved? Are they cold and hungry? And do they know Christ? Or do they feel that God loves them? Then you probably haven't had something disrupt your life. Because all it takes is one major disruption, a major loss, a traumatic event, a diagnosis, something that happens in your life that just stops you in your tracks, and suddenly everything kind of filters away like Pinterest. You miss it for months, and you go back to it and realize, wow, nothing's really any different. Or I haven't talked to anybody on Facebook in months, and it doesn't matter because something happened in your life that needed to be tended to, that all your energy and the capacity you do have, though it may feel minimum, is all you've got to handle with what's in your future within day to day. And then how does that then change your ability to say, my kids are loved, that they know they have a place that they're going to be taken care of and be safe and fed, and that they know the love of Christ?
That flows into the very last one that we were going to talk about, which is probably the biggest and probably the hardest thing to talk about whenever it comes to chaos and where the most chaos could come from. So when your phone rings in the middle of the night and you look and it's your mom and you think, oh gosh, we all have that sinking thing in our stomach that whenever you look at your phone at 2 a.m. and it says mom on there, there's something that happens physically to your body. It could be that phone call that comes in the middle of the afternoon and you don't know why it's coming, but it's coming from a police department locally that says there's been a terrible accident. Your husband was in a terrible accident. Your wife and kids were in a terrible accident. These are the life emergencies. These are some things that will happen, that could happen, that have happened to some of us that immediately can spin a completely organized life and a completely structured
peaceful
way of doing things, yes, into ultimate chaos, chaos that you'll never be ready for, may never have experienced before. But the life emergencies don't have to be bad. They can also be good. So you're not feeling very good one month. And next thing you know, oh, surprise. Life emergency. We're pregnant. But wait, we were only planning for two. And now we're pregnant with three. What do you do?
Panic.
It's a good, but it's also chaos. You know immediately once you see that pregnancy test that your life has changed forever.
Yeah.
That what you're experiencing now is just the tip of the iceberg of what could be to come.
And then it's going to change.
And it could change from day to day after that. Another one, maybe you have children. You start noticing some differences. You start noticing some decline in speech. You go to the doctor for the annual two-year checkup just to get that well visit checked off your list. Well, the doctor says, I think you should see someone else. What do you do with that? What do you do with that sense of, wow, everything that we knew has now changed? What if your child is playing on the playground at school and they fall off the monkey bars? You go to the ER and they say, you know, he's alive, but there's been some damage. So now you go from having two children who could walk and talk and participate in life just like, you know, you've been experiencing for the past 8 years, to having a child who might need a wheelchair or might need oxygen continuously or might have damage done to their brain that's not able to be repaired. It's those kind of things that can happen in an instant that could totally take what you think of as normal and throw it up in the air and twist it around and throw it back on your plate and say, okay, here you go. Now let's talk. There was a woman who came and talked about grief a couple weeks ago at Marriage Corps, and one of the things she said that has stuck with me is, prepare for in the light how you'll respond in the darkness. So by not talking about things, about the what ifs, about what could happen, is actually kind of taking a step back and saying, you know, if that happens, we'll deal with it then. Well, it's a lot harder to find supplies to start a fire whenever it's pitch black outside than it is when the sun's up and you can start collecting, being ready for that time when the sun goes down. So that's one thing that with chaos of life, with life emergencies, one of the myths that you'll find, and that we all tend to believe all the time, is I am in complete control. We can sit here today and say, oh, that will never happen to me. We've been fixed. I've had the surgery. My children are 15, 18. You know, my children aren't driving yet, so there's nothing that's going to happen. Mm. My kids are always with me, and so I know everyone around them, so nothing ever is going to happen to them. My husband works from home. He doesn't even have to drive to work, so we're safe there. Well, reality is that you're not in complete control. But the good thing is we know who is. You want to speak to that any before we move on?
Sure. Yeah, I just...
You're awfully quiet over there.
I know. Because I'm having a memory moment, actually, just in thinking about that. So my son, when he was born, I had an older daughter, and she was, man, head. I had all the developmental stuff from my psychology background. I had all that stuff lined up. I was just joking, telling them earlier today that I took ridiculous amounts of video of her developing, which you don't think you can see, but if you let the video camera run long enough... you can see it. So I remember having all my different books that said, you know, by 3 months they're doing this, by 6 months doing this, by 7 months they're doing this. And I think it was about month four that I noticed he was not developing like every other kid. And so within about a two-month period of us going, okay, something's not right here, going to the pediatrician and trying to read through what she wasn't saying, which is the curse of a counselor kind of person, and getting this idea that this wasn't going to look typical, this wasn't going to be what we saw with my daughter, I went home and I took every developmental book I had and went to Half Price Books. I took it all out and said, I am not going to be in control of this picture. I'm not going to be able to guess. I'm not going to be able to predict. I'm not even going to be able to ask other moms, what do you think? Where are we going? What's this look like? I sort of had to just get rid of that. And that meant stepping into saying, I'm out. Like, I got nothing. Not only do I not know what's coming next, but I don't even know what to do with it. And there was no, like, great little rescue team that came in and said, well, it's okay, because he's got this, this, and this, and we'll do this for this problem, and we'll do this for this problem. I mean, those of you all that have had sick kids or kids that struggle with special issues or some sort of disability, and I guess I can say that word now, right? Still, is that politically correct, disability? Well, I'm on that side, so I can say it. That you catch yourself saying, this is the new normal. That's why that phrase comes to my mind, like, this is the new normal. And so if you've not experienced that, if everything's kind of just been going along and you haven't had a major loss or major difficulty, don't dread that. I know that's just crazy thinking. It does not work in your brain that way, but don't dread that. But understand the opportunity in that disruption in your life to lose control, or to better yet, wake up and realize you didn't have any in the first place, is God's way of saying, you need me. I am over the universe, not you. I am over your family. I, God, love your kids more than you possibly can, Chrissy. And I don't know, always believe that. Like, I question him on that sometimes, because I just think, well, I would throw myself in front of a car, hope for them, right? And I have a struggle with that and wanting to be bigger than God to my kids and being willing to surrender that. Man, that's what having a special needs kid has taught me, is that if I can willingly step into that, and let me be honest, I have to ask him to help me be willing, because it's just not in my human bones. I just don't go running out in front of things and saying, I'll do it for him. Let me be sacrificed instead. But to ask God to do that for me has changed my perspective. So now I feel like I have a unique perspective, because I don't have a choice. I don't have any decision. I don't even have the luxury of telling people how to see him, because I don't know. I can't explain it either. I have no way to predict, so I just quit.
So you don't have a choice in the circumstances, but you do have a choice in how you respond to the circumstances.
Which is the books. My response was going to be, I'm not going to beat myself up over trying to figure out what's supposed to be next and why isn't this happening. I'm just going to take it out of the picture and say, all right, now what?
Right. So that's the truth. You don't have control over the chaos, but you do have control in how you respond to it. The takeaway is, the way I respond teaches my children that I'm dependent on the God who is in control. This is probably the biggest thing you can do for your children, is teach them that you're not in control, but that God is. And when something is thrown your way that you have no idea how to handle, you're in the throes of trying to decide what to do for a parent, what to do for a spouse, what to do for a child. And honestly, all you want to do, which is all I want to do, is curl up in a ball and start crying. You have to remember that your children are looking to you as their example, and they're going to start responding to chaos and to challenges and to hurt the way that they see you respond. So if in that moment, if God gives you the strength to turn and look to him, that's the best parenting thing you can ever do.
And then also to stink at it.
Right.
I mean, I think that's what my kids have learned, is there are times when I just go, I'm done figuring this out. I'm done even trying to be all willing and rolling with it. I'm just done being all that. I don't even know how to respond positively anymore. And I am willing to say that in front of my kids. I'm really sorry, you guys. I'm just nasty today. I don't know why. I can't even give you an explanation or a legitimate reason. I'm kind of discouraged. And to let my kids see that, because ultimately behind that, they know that I'll come out of that going, but I believe that God has got it going on. And because he knows, I don't always have to know. And I'm freed by that. That's what I want my kids to learn, is I'm freed up by that. I'm not scared. I'm freed up to be the mom that he needs me to be, instead of the one that I feel like dadgum culture is telling me to be all the time, which is perfect and competitive and productive and all those difficult pronounced words that I'm not sure I'm measuring up to, but I do know that I'm offering all that I am and all for God to use in my kids' lives. And I've got to be okay with that.
And even within your marriage relationship, I think the same is true, that being able to say, I don't know what's going to happen. I wish I could control this, but I can't. And allowing that vulnerability between a husband and wife, I think, is something that all too often we try to hide behind our insecurities and don't even share that with our spouse, which is a big thing also.
It is. And I think that's hard for the guys, because I know as a wife boy, when things have been most difficult, I look at him and say, but everything's going to be fine, isn't it? Like, if you even blink and tell me otherwise, you'll be sleeping outside. You know, that there's a lot of pressure on him to keep the stability and to be convincing to everyone, including himself, that everything's going to be fine. That he believes it. I need him to believe it more than me sometimes. Hmm. And I don't know. I don't know how fair that is.
I think the second thing on here, the second takeaway, is you can plan for a lot, but the Lord can change all of that in an instant. I think sometimes us who are type A, who want everything structured and planned and laid out, sometimes hear this as you don't need to plan for anything because the Lord has it all under control, or he's going to change it whenever you do plan it. Well, that's not necessarily true. There are times when you do plan things and it's fine and it works out perfectly, but it's all right. Holding that loosely. It's holding your ideas for your family, your ideas for your children, your ideas for your perfect summer vacation that's going to happen, yet the day before you leave, you all get the stomach bug and have to cancel it. It's things like that. It's being overseas and serving on a great mission trip and getting a phone call that something's happened back at home and having to struggle with what to do there. It's just recognizing that as much as I can plan, as much as I can be prepared, I'm still not in control. And that is, I think, as a mom and as a wife, a really hard thing to let go.
And it's a fine line, because I want my kids to feel safe and as secure as they possibly can in this world. If they're young kids in my house, in our family, we want to provide all of that for them to the best of our ability, but we also want them to always know that we're dependent as parents on God to provide that. I don't create the security. I just follow the guidelines that help partner in security. So I have a house, but I may not one day. I mean, I could lose my house at some point. I've seen it happen in weeks' time in people's lives, and I have to hold that loosely. But ultimately, if that happened, I know God would provide. It would be somebody else's house. We may have to go live with another family. You know, I just believe that, and the more I'm okay with that, the more I'm assured of that, the more I'm saying that in everything I do and everything I say to them, even if it's not a perfect little booklet lesson. You know, again, I think the elementary school does a great job of structuring all these topics and lessons in the assemblies and in their activities. I mean, I don't know, did y'all get all that when you were growing up? Did you, I mean, Stranger Danger, some of y'all are pretty young, maybe you did, but as older people, we didn't get that. We were just supposed to figure it out for ourselves that the guy was a stranger.
McGruff, the crime dog, we had McGruff, right?
We did?
We did. We did over here on this side.
It depends on where you grew up too, right? Yeah. You younger people. But still, just being able to have a sense of being able to create that in your house, not knowing, you know, what the future holds, but knowing that you're teaching your kids that you're not afraid of the future. You're embracing it with open arms and an open sense of control, being willing to know that God has that control way beyond what you're capable of.